Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, a great moment. The President of the United States has just told us. President Biden just spoke in Atlanta, and it was in many ways the most emotional speech he had given in his presidency. Well, at least since the speech on January 6th, which was also full of emotion and passion and fire. This speech about voting rights, the most fundamental of all American rights, according to many people, certainly up there with freedom of religion and freedom of speech, freedom of expression, a freedom of assembly, etc. A key right to vote that's enunciated in the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, that's under threat. So says President Biden, and agreeing with him, apparently, is Juan Williams, who says in a column in The Hill, American democracy will die unless voting rights are protected. Juan Williams is a best-selling author, a political analyst for Fox News Channel, and a regular columnist for The Hill. Juan, thank you very much for joining us on the show. Did you hear the president's speech?
I did, Michael. I watched it. I was taken by the passion, as you just mentioned, with which he spoke. And I think you're right. I think you saw similar passion when he spoke on January 6th.
Yes, you did. And again, there are two separate issues. And if you don't mind, I'd like to try to keep them separate because I sounds like the president had just read your column.
Well, I hope so, but I don't know that.
Okay, but he's certainly making the same points you are. You say at the end of your column, now's the time for all Senate Democrats and Republicans willing to step outside the Trump cult to preserve voting rights for all against the deceitful, violent effort to end American democracy. Okay, that's tough language. And in those terms, of the 19 voting law changes in 19 states across the country, what do you think is the most serious assault on American democracy and the specific changes that have been made in the state legislative level?
Well, I think that there's no question that when you have Republican majority state legislatures voting that they should determine who wins and loses elections because they really take over the function, the role of the Secretary of State as they did in Georgia and make it then a matter of partisan vision as to who wins an election. To me, that means the election doesn't matter. Your vote doesn't matter. Your energy and passion for one candidate or another, Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter. It's just up to some guys in suits in a state legislature. And in this case, it's a Republican legislature, but imagine if it was a Democratic legislature. It'd be no better.
Okay, but we're now talking about a different set of changes than what President Biden is concerned with. He's concerned with what is called the John Lewis Voting Rights Act that is stymied in the Senate. And I'm wondering about the changes that are particularly racist, because that charge has also been made, that this is all these Republican changes that have been made in 19 different states and 34 different new laws, that those changes have been aimed at suppressing black voters. Do you think that's true?
I don't think there's any question. Look, the heart and soul of this, Michael, let's go back to the heart and soul of it. The heart and soul of it is Trump said the 2020 election was stolen from him on the basis of fraudulent voting. We've never seen any proof of it, but that's what he said. And then as a consequence of that argument, what you see is the state legislature saying, wait a second, look at where we see these high voter turnouts. And they were in big cities, minority communities, black, Hispanic. Look at these highly educated white communities around colleges. And they came out and they voted. And you know what? We are going to say we're going to limit some of these mail-in voting. We're going to cut back on the number of days on which you can vote before an election. We're going to limit access to the voting box in many places. In Georgia, they even said we're not going to allow you to have water or food brought to people waiting in line. I mean, I don't think there's any question that there shouldn't be a differential between, you know, voting in a rural area where it takes you 2 minutes and then saying, well, no, but for the resident of a city, it's going to be normal for you to take 2 hours.
But again, what you're talking about is federalizing this issue. And given the fact that in the last election, nothing you can point to in the last election indicates any successful voter suppression. It was a monstrously large turnout everywhere and across the board. One of the interesting things about this whole idea, and by the way, I am not somebody who believes that there was massive fraud in the election of 2020. I think it was a solid, legitimate election, and it was the highest voter turnout we had since 1908.
Okay.
And that across the country. So
right.
The question is, in terms of, do you think it's fair? Because once upon a time in this country, before 1965 in the Voting Rights Act, there was active voter suppression, and it was very specific, and it was racially based, and there was a fight for that, and democracy won. Do you really believe that that is at stake and threatened by the idea of, oh, maybe making 1 day or 1 week less of early voting, which didn't even exist in 1965, by the way?
Correct. And so what we have now, I mean, this is an interesting way that you presented the argument, because if I'm listening to the Michael Medved show, I'd say, yeah, Michael's right. You know, there was really high-level turnout in the 2020 election. No evidence of voter fraud, as Trump alleged. To the contrary, big turnout. So what are these people complaining about? How can they dare say that there's any racial component? But it's Michael. It's then after the 2020 election that we've seen all these Republican state legislatures pass laws, put in place efforts that are intended, in my view, to suppress voter turnout from areas that don't vote Republican. And most of those areas, as I mentioned in the Hill column, are heavily populated by blacks, Hispanics, immigrants, college-educated whites. That was the intent. So that's why I say, stop it. Don't do that. Don't suppress the right to vote.
When you talk about intent, you're talking about literally thousands, and it is thousands, of different individual legislators who either voted for or against these specific state changes. And in each of those states, there is a different reality and different complexities. And when you are imputing to everybody who voted for a change, oh, for instance, requiring voter ID, which I know is a very controversial issue, but one that is not controversial with Americans, you know, polling indicates that most people have no problem with voter ID. And the idea that can you hang with us for another segment, Juan?
I'd be delighted, Michael.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate talking about this. We'll post your piece from The Hill on our website at michaelmedved.com. It's under the headline, Juan Williams, American Democracy Will Die Unless Voting Rights Are Protected. Look, I think we have to protect our democracy. And I do believe that there are forces out there that are assaulting democracy. But not by, oh, for instance, banning bringing food and water to people in voting lines. No, I don't think that's a life or death issue, but we will get to that and more with Juan Williams coming up.
From politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved show, talking with Juan Williams, who's an author and a columnist for The Hill, and obviously a very prominent for a generation political analyst. And Juan was very supportive, in fact, moved by the speech just delivered by President Biden at the University Center in Atlanta. And it's a speech on this issue of voting rights. If I want to just get back to it for a moment, I want to go to the very center of your objection, which is the idea that you're usually willing to grant at least a benefit of the doubt for motivations of politicians when they display something even that you disagree with. And just to get to some of the things that people are arguing about right now about these election reform bills, someone would call them election suppression bills. People on the left would say that. In 19 states that have been passed since the election. Okay. Do you acknowledge that there are legitimate arguments against, say, a month of early voting?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, what I'm thinking, Michael, is you could say that there would be issues that arise, circumstances change that might influence your vote, and then you would have...
Good. That's exactly right. For instance, one of the things that decided the election of 2016 was that announcement about reinvestigating Hillary. Now, people who had engaged in very early voting, that was 10 days before the election. They wouldn't have heard about that.
That's right. So I said that. Yeah.
Okay. So does it really threaten the death of democracy if a state decides to cut back, to trim the period of time for early voting, which, again, didn't even exist in the United States a generation ago?
Well, I think that you have to talk about what's reasonable, and of course you have to put some of the onus on people who are voting. Now, if somebody says to you, you know what, I'm going out of town, or I'm going out of the country, or I'm going into the hospital, or whatever, and I need that time to vote, we already have absentee ballots. So, you know, you could say we'll use an absentee ballot. Well, if we are curtailing the amount of time, you know, okay, but then at what point do you curtail it, and how do you let's discuss
right,
but I don't think it's something to be done arbitrarily, because then it becomes a matter of the bigger issue, which is that we know lots of people in this country say, on that Tuesday, I'm busy, I couldn't get a babysitter, you know, and then you find they don't vote, and we want people to vote. We want people to have confidence and trust in a sense that they are represented in this democratic process.
But I want to get that down to the essential factor here, is who should make that decision? And it seems to me that not every state would want to make the same decision, that it's perfectly legitimate if they have 2 weeks of early voting in the state of Maryland, say, but nearby in the state of Delaware, for whatever reason, they would decide, no, we want to have just 1 week of early voting. The preempting everything by the federal government is the main reason that there is opposition to, and there may in fact be legal challenges to, the so-called John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
Well, the John Lewis Act speaks to the Supreme Court decision to undo a central tenet of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which had been extended for, you know, 40 years or so, until the court finally ruled that one section they thought was insupportable because they thought it was outdated. And
that was back in the Clinton administration that the court made that ruling, right?
No, that was more recent. That was, I think, in the time of Barack Obama that the court...
Okay, but since that time, what's happened to election turnout among my minority voters? It has soared, and that's a good thing for America. I agree with you. I want to see more people voting, not fewer people voting, and more people of every kind.
Yeah, but I don't want the politicians picking the voters. I want the voters picking the politicians.
Well said, and I can second that entirely. But when you talk about, I mean, there's been so much focus, I believe that it's in Georgia, that one of the rules that they passed was to prevent people from bringing food to people while they're waiting in line. And again, I don't believe that it prohibits that for individuals if you want to bring some food for Aunt Mary. But if you are campaigning, let's say you're campaigning for Donald Trump, you're not allowed as a campaign organization to provide food because now, do I think that's a smart rule? I think they should let people alone and let them eat and drink as they want to. But the idea that this debate about how you regulate your ability to campaign with people while they're waiting in line to vote, most states have regulations where they prohibit in-person campaigning at the voting booth, right?
Correct. Within a certain ambit of the polling place, you're not supposed to campaign anyway. But this is the, you know, rationalization used by the legislature in Georgia. But in fact, it's not that you know, if Aunt Mary's stuck in the line that, you know, that Michael or Juan can't bring her some water. That's the rule. You can't do it. Now, to my mind, I'm all for saying there's a certain area, no more campaigning. Let people just stand in line to vote and vote. But I would just call to your attention the reality again. Long lines are where? In big cities and suburbs with big concentrations of people. And that's where the need for a drink or food comes into play or even to use the restroom. And what they're saying is, oh, those people who are ready, I think, bearing a greater burden to exercise their right to vote will have no convenience. They're going to make it less passable for them to tolerate the time waiting. That, to me, is obviously intended to suppress their vote, to get them
to not vote. But again, you keep imputing these evil intentions to people who disagree with you about how many feet you regulate from the polling place in which you can be involved. And the idea here is that leaving these decisions, and if one dislikes the decisions made by the Georgia legislature, there's going to be a very vigorous campaign. Then talk about repealing that legislative role in Georgia. Don't say that we now need to have a one-size-fits-all federal regulation of everything. That's just the growth of federal authority, which a lot of us are kind of allergic to. I'm not at all allergic to talking with Juan Williams, one of the, in my opinion, good guys involved in public discourse in the United States. His piece, American Democracy Will Die Unless Voting Rights Are Protected. We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show.
It's powerful and inspiring.
And on the Michael Medved Show, I know that with the president's reference today, and he kept coming back to it and back to it, and I understand that. He's going back to years when he was in high school and when he was in college at the University of Delaware. And yes, there was a mobilization in the United States for justice during those years, for making sure that everybody had access to the vote. But equating that with what is going on with these discussions about how many feet away from the polling place is it acceptable to prevent people from eating? This is not a similarly consequential issue. And one of the ways to get better informed about what the civil rights movement really was, about what the issues were, about the drama of it, is we have one of our Medved history shows, which is available free for Medhead Plus members, people who have joined our premium website membership. And basically that gives you the right to go ahead and download, to stream our show, either live or on tape, anytime, 24/7, and it's commercial-free. Or also to access all of our history programs, including a history program on Dr. King, which is very appropriate for Martin Luther King Day. It includes some substantial excerpts from some of his more remarkable speeches where, so help me, Dr. King sounds positively conservative, at least by today's standards. And when you listen to it, you'll be inspired. This has been one of our most popular MedVet history programs ever. Check it out at MedVet History Store. And again, available free for people who expend the grand total of 22 cents a day for membership in our MedHead Plus membership. Go to michaelmedved.com or go to medvedhistorystore.com. Concerning the voting rights, it's interesting that all of this is hitting the fan right about now, but this from the Wall Street Journal, and it's a report by Jimmy Vilkind in New York City. And he says that Republican officials filed a lawsuit yesterday challenging a New York City law that went into effect over the weekend, allowing 800,000 non-citizens to vote in municipal elections. The Democrat-controlled New York City Council approved the measure in December, though then-Mayor Bill de Blasio expressed misgivings about its legality on Saturday. The new mayor, Eric Adams, also a Democrat, said he initially had some concerns about the length of the residency requirements of the bill, but they were assuaged by talking with bill supporters. He didn't sign or veto the bill, allowing it to automatically become law 30 days after its passage. Beginning with city council races in 2023, lawful permanent residents or those authorized to work in the U.S. can vote in city elections if they have lived in the five boroughs for 30 days or longer and meet the other requirements for voting. The law doesn't grant voting rights to immigrants who entered the country illegally. The other rights, these are people who work in the U.S., and they have to have lived in the five boroughs for 30 days or more, that's all? You're then qualified to vote in American elections for city council, for local office in New York? Republican plaintiffs, including New York City Council Minority Leader Joe Borelli and Staten Island Borough President Vito Fasella, said the law violates state election law and the New York State Constitution, which says that all citizens over age 18 shall be eligible to vote. But it uses the term citizens. It doesn't use the term residents, which would kind of indicate, yeah, you got a constitutional problem, buddy. The lawsuit filed in state Supreme Court in Staten Island against Mr. Adams, the new mayor, the city council, and the city's board of elections seeks to invalidate the law and requests an order stopping its implementation. The Adams administration intends to vigorously defend the law in court, said Adams spokesperson Jose Bayona. A city council spokesperson said the law was passed by a body that represented all New Yorkers. A spokeswoman for the board of elections declined to comment. Advocates of the new law say the state constitution sets a floor, not a ceiling, regarding who is allowed to vote in municipal elections. This is, it seems to me, a ridiculous issue. It's stupid that we have to even talk about it. What is exactly the purpose, other than trying to mold people into new Democrats, by saying that people who are not citizens, that have made not taken the effort to go ahead and follow the legal path to citizenship, where over half of American immigrants today are people who've been naturalized. People who are born abroad and been naturalized. There are people listening to me now who are in that category. And what this does is it thumbs the nose at and basically shows disrespect to the whole process of citizenship and naturalization, just to mean something to be an American citizen. And on this issue, and for the Democrats to do this now, it just seems to be a tremendous political miscalculation. I'll tell you one thing. The same Wall Street Journal that ran this article, that ran an editorial against this particular law, basically says that Eric Adams has made his first mistake. That same journal ran a piece, very good piece, that we covered on the air last Thursday, at Thursday of, January 6th. And it said Manchin Adams in 2024. Yeah, and it's Daniel Henninger writing about how Mayor Adams, Eric Adams, the new mayor of New York, was somebody who was trying to lead the Democratic Party in a more moderate, proper direction. Well, not with this. And again, even Bill de Blasio, the extreme left-wing mayor, saw that there were problems here. And where it says that the people who shall be allowed to vote in the state of New York, in the state constitution trumps a city ordinance that is passed in New York, which is ridiculous and makes no sense. And the argument for it, I mean, if people are living in the United States and they're working here, and they want to participate in our democratic process, there's a way for them to do it. All of the people that they are now granting the right to vote to already have the right to go ahead and get naturalized and become U.S. citizens. But to try to spurn that right and show disrespect for it makes no sense at all. Now, as to Juan Williams, I appreciate him coming on the show. I look forward to having him back to talk about more. But this notion that it is a life and death matter to talk about how many days of early voting you should have or what the circumstances are for mail-in voting, it's a ridiculous obsession that makes no sense. We will be right back on the Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, with the President of the United States speaking so passionately and so extremely about the question of voting procedures, because that's what it is. It's not voting rights. There is nothing, and I challenged Juan Williams about that. There's nothing in any of these bills. There are 34 pieces of legislation in 19 different states that have been passed since the election more than a year ago. And there are none of those bills that take away anyone's voting rights. It's nothing that says that any individual who is currently a legal registered voter will no longer have the right to vote. What you're talking about is there are some changes that may involve voting convenience, but generally there is, again, this Pew study that shows that right after the election, 94% thought it was very convenient, very easy to vote, and were fully satisfied with the level of convenience in voting. Now, is it possible that you'll lose some of that 94%? They'll say, oh, it was a little bit harder now to vote because I had to reach into my pocket and I had to get my driver's license out of my wallet, or take a driver's license out of a purse. I mean, for goodness sake, the idea that this is being treated as if we were going back to the days of Bull Connor. Yeah, that's what you heard President Biden said. He said, today we're going to have to choose, am I on the side of Bull Connor or on the side of John Lewis? Bull Connor, the police commissioner in Birmingham, who used German Shepherd police dogs and water hoses and billy clubs to beat up peaceful civil rights demonstrators. For goodness sake, is that where we are in America? Now, the one good thing for Biden, I guess, is all of this focus allows him to turn away from the ongoing crisis of the pandemic, with the numbers not looking good and the administration not providing much guidance in where we are going with all of this. A president was outside the White House today on his way to Atlanta, where he gave that speech about voting rights. And a reporter asked him about the overall progress on the pandemic right now. Listen, this is clip one.
Are you concerned overall about the progress on the pandemic right now? Do you feel like your administration is not meeting the targets it needs to meet?
Well, I am concerned about the pandemic just because it worldwide is not slowing up very much. And thank God, what we've been able to do is generate significant federal help in terms of folks both coming into the hospitals and administering all the help that these states need. That's what we're doing now, but I'm confident we're on the right track.
I'm confident we're on the right track. It's difficult to say that because it's difficult to say what track they're actually on. At a congressional hearing, a veteran Democrat, Washington's own Senator Patty Murray, sympathized with the frustration, the confusion, and the exhaustion around COVID testing, which just has been a mess because there is an unclear standard going out there. And it's unclear for people, even who want to follow all the guidelines and want to do the most responsible thing we possibly can to slow this pandemic or to stop the devastation of the Omicron virus and variant. This is clip 12 at a congressional hearing. This is Senator Patty Murray. Listen.
But I'm hearing more and more questions like, what kind of test should I get? When should I get tested? Why can't I find a test? Do I need to isolate 10 days, 5 days, or even at all? Testing in particular is a huge concern for parents who are starting 2022 exhausted.
Okay, this is a Democrat. And then Scott Gottlieb, who's a former FDA commissioner under Republican leadership, spoke about the CDC guidelines. He was on CNBC. Here's Dr. Gottlieb.
Well, I think the CDC guidelines reflect the reality that a lot of the spread right now is being done by people who are mildly or asymptomatic and aren't turning over their infections. And so to impose all the regulations and restrictions on a small percentage of people who are actually getting diagnosed and self-isolating isn't going to control this epidemic. Just like we're not doing contact tracing right now, a lot of schools aren't making recommendations to quarantine students when there's a case in the class because there's just so much infection that you're not going to be driving this epidemic by the infections that you're turning over. I think with respect to the CDC guidance more generally, I mean, the reality is that the CDC is not an agency accustomed to talking to the public. They usually issue their recommendations through public health agencies to providers. In this epidemic, they were thrust into a position of having to issue bottom line recommendations to consumers. It's not something they do. And I think we made a mistake all along for the last 2 years looking to the CDC for guidance on how we were going to live our lives. We really should have been looking to more local authorities for that kind of guidance. You know, ultimately, you need to reform the CDC. We need some kind of federal public health agency capable of doing this. But CDC was not that agency. And it's very hard for an agency to self-organize and reform itself in a setting of a crisis. CDC has been unable to do that.
Wow. And is anyone, would anyone disagree with that? There was this on CNN. The Secretary of Health, Education, and Health and Human Services. It used to be Health, Education, and Welfare. HHS Secretary Javier Becerra basically said that lives depend on the Supreme Court sustaining every detail of President Biden's vaccine or test mandate for large businesses. 13.
And if they don't, well, I think that will be on their conscience. I think there's some clear authority, legal authority, for us to move forward as we have proposed, both for the private sector workforce and for the healthcare workforce. And we understand that if we don't get people vaccinated and covered this way, people will die. And if you're a healthcare worker, for sure.
Okay, again, making this an issue of life and death. And by the way, I don't think there is any kind of wide expectation that the court will strike down vaccination requirements for healthcare workers. I mean, really. Speaking of healthcare, there's a movie that has an unhealthy level of female instituted violence. Stars Penelope Cruz and Jessica Chastain and more. But is it actually worth seeing? Listen to the 355.
Now it's time for Med-Ved's Entertainment Minute.
Jessica Chastain, Lupita Nyong'o, Penelope Cruz, some of the top actresses in the world, playing some of the top secret agents in the world in the new international thriller, The 355, playing in theaters across the country.
We're the top agents from around the world. Now we have a common enemy. They can start World War III.
I like the new team.
We're the 355.
And there's a lot to like in terms of talent and glamour with that new team, but they're stuck with a script that makes little sense and that offers shallow characterizations that function as little more than periodic breaks from elaborate but preposterous action scenes. Sebastian Stan is effective as a CIA operative who may be a crucial ally or something else entirely for the tough and determined women of the 355. Though it's glitzy and sometimes slick, this PG-13 rated film that ought to be R is above all a tremendous waste of talent. Two stars for the disappointing The 355. And it's hard to imagine that anybody will be satisfied with this plot line. It's one of those things where there's a little gizmo that is going to destroy the world, and if they don't move quickly, tick, 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 boom. That's another film, Tick, Tick, Boom, but that's a different matter to consider. Meanwhile, tomorrow, student leaders are demanding that frat houses now be transformed from domains for the wealthy and white into affinity housing for marginalized citizens. And American society is clearly becoming more liberal than 50 years ago, but it's voting more Republican. Is that an anomaly? Is there an explanation? And a slew of House Democrats are retiring, 26 so far. What do those departures mean for the future and for our present? We will get to all of that Wednesday in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.